I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:37. Apologies for the tardiness on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. Present today are Representative Stapp, Representative Bynum, Representative Hannon, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, Co-Chair Neil Foster, and Co-Chair Andy Josephson. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will hear three presentations from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The first will be its FY27 budget overview. Then we will hear a presentation on the Alaska Marine Highway System financing, followed by invited testimony. Invited testimony. Thinking of something else. Lastly, we'll hear a presentation on the Alaska Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. The slide deck provided to the committee contains all three presentations. Slides 1 through 8 contain the FY27 budget overview. Slide 9 through 13 contains the presentation on the Alaska Marine Highway System. Slide 14 through 17 contains its presentation on the Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan. Our plan is to take it slowly today. I didn't write that, but we'll take it slow today and pause for questions between slides. We will also pause for questions between presentations. At the end of the Alaska Marine Highway System presentation, Mr. Robert Venables, the Executive Director of Southeast Conference, will be asked to come forward for invited testimony before we begin on the STIP presentation. With us today from the department for all three presentations are Commissioner Ryan Anderson, Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, Don Pannone, Director for the Division of Program Management and Administration. I see that Ms. Keith is in the room, although I don't see her, so I don't see that. But we'll figure that out. Commissioner Anderson and Director Pannone, please come forward, put yourselves on the record, and begin your presentation.
For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson, and I'm the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Thank you for having us here today at the House Finance Committee. Chair, appreciate the time. Deputy Commissioner Keith will be here after a bit. She actually started out in another hearing with Senate Transportation Committee, but she'll be here for this day. So today, as was discussed, we really wanted to give everyone the presentation on our FY27 operating budget. Also, the Alaska Marine Highway, because that has been a high-interest topic with our federal funding shortfall. And then we have made the trip out to Washington, D.C. and talked with the Federal Transit Administration. So we wanted to make sure we gave everyone a good report out on that. And then, of course, we've made some good progress on the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program and get everyone up to speed on where we're at with that and the next, the rolling STIP, we're calling it as well. So with that, we'll just begin our presentation.
Mm-hmm. Please.
For the record, Don Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration for the Department of Transportation. The first few slides of this presentation are structured to follow along with the legislative finance booklet that it creates every year and basically outlines the significant items, and we've noted which item in the legislative finance budget book at the top of every slide that we're discussing. The first slide here is for a budget request that deletes 23 positions and creates a savings for the department in our operating budget of roughly $3.5 million. These are positions that we've gone through and have found that we are able to realign with other direction, or the work that's been done by these positions has moved elsewhere or changed drastically in the last several years, or the way we accomplish these objectives has changed. 23 of these positions, 10 of them at the time of the governor's budget, were filled. And at this point in time, 6 of them have either found another job, or we've moved them to another job within the department, or are pending some sort of administrative change, such as retirement or any number of changes. And 4, we remain committed to assisting find other work prior to the enactment of the budget.
Director, we've been joined by Representative Allard and I think Representative Galvin. Representative Galvin, do you have a question?
I do, but I can wait till the end of this slide. Okay. It's on this slide.
Director, please continue. Sorry for the interruption.
Thank you.
And we've been joined by Co-Chair Shragi as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the spread of this, staffing reductions does cross the exempt positions, supervisory, and the general bargaining unit positions. It also spreads across Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, and we've outlined that spread here in the tables at the bottom of the slide.
Okay. I guess we're going to questions. Representative Galvin and then staff. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Joseph, and through the chair, I am not sure if this is reflective of a division director of Anchorage being dismissed or somehow leaving that department. But if so, I would like to hear more about that in light of what we know is true. Again, Anchorage has seen too many problems with regard to safety in major areas in my district. So I would like to hear about that division director no longer present and if this is reflected here.
Director or commissioner? Preference.
I'll start with the answer, Mr. Chairman.
Director.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Galvin, the deputy, the division director exempt position listed under Anchorage is a deputy director position that we've had vacant for roughly a year in some regions. And historically, we've had two positions that are the job class of division director, and one has served as a deputy. So this is not the central region director. This was a vacant deputy director position that we'd had for several months. And I'll let the commissioner speak to the rest of the question.
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. Yeah, when we were looking overall at our department and trying to find, you know, number one, modernizing, but number two, we recognized we're in a budget, you know, in a budget situation, the fiscal, you know, constraint right now we want to recognize. We looked across all of our, we have individual regions that run our planning, design, construction, maintenance, and operations. And they were all set up differently. And so some regions had a single director, and then some had directors with deputy directors. And so what we're trying to do is really make it consistent across the state and how things look. And really where the work is happening in the regions is that we have what are called pre-construction engineers and construction engineers, and they're engineer five classifications, range 27 in our state government. And they're really the ones where, you know, they're executing on all the capital programs or on the planning and the construction and the design. So those were not impacting whatsoever. We're keeping those strong. We're going to continue with that. But with these PX positions, those were identified as ones that I think, you know, we can keep everything, you know, good and get it better, you know, with this structure that we're proposing.
Follow-up.
Rec. Galvin.
Well, thank you. I appreciate what I'm hearing. Some of it was budget situation, want to look nice. And I have to, again, as you know, because we've had these discussions in my office and in other places, that doesn't bode well to say that we are doing the job of moving people and things safely from one place to another in DOT. And when I see, and I've heard now multiple times, that we have the same number of people in positions in Anchorage as in Fairbanks, for example. I mean, what I'm not seeing is a leveling of decisions that I know of. And again, perhaps I'm misreading this, but when I find out that we're losing someone in Anchorage, it's a flag for me because I think we need to be making investments in Anchorage. And I hear what you're saying. We're having a fiscal situation. But I also know that the budget has been historically inclusive, historically, of where the needs are, that there's been some real scientific work around here, and I've been given this list. Here's where we know the intersections of trouble are. Here's where the most fatalities are. Here's where the biggest accidents are. Let's focus there. to me, that seems like a really great way to approach the issue when it comes to making budgetary decisions. And so I'm having this conversation with you to warmly welcome you to alert the public as to how we might be looking at this, because I'm concerned. Sorry, if I may, Chair Josephson, I've been raising the voice of our community councils, where we've heard over and over again, do something differently for our district. And I did hear some response that you're going to do something differently with regard to timing of lights, of intersections, and that's great. And I was also given a whole box of reflector gear, which is great for helping to educate the public. Yeah. Hang on. That's good money and good investment in terms of creating safety spaces for our public to know. And I'm asking us to also reflect upon the dollars spent in terms of where we're hiring people and getting the work done with regard to our road maintenance. I've received too many text messages and emails with videos and photos of the very intersections that you've given me information about with regard to dangerous spots, hot spots that need to be addressed. And that's where I'll leave it. And I'm really wanting to hear on the record what we're going to do differently.
Commissioner, do you have a response to those comments?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. Yeah. So what you see here on the slide is we're trying to address our reductions. I mean, you'll see it's Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Ketchikan. It's across the board. When we're looking at specific areas like the hotspots that we've discussed, and we've had those discussions, and I know you've had follow-up discussions with our staff about what's possible there. I've had follow-up discussions, you know, to make sure that we are taking those very seriously, and we're looking at those. The thing is when we're looking at these things, it's not only our staff how we resource these things. We have contractors that do a lot of work for us. And so you'll see that. I mean, that we're putting the resources there, and we're going to make sure that, you know, we're taking care of these things to the extent we can. But that's – so when you – what you see here is really our approach to be able to modernize our department, to keep the focus in these areas, these important areas that you're discussing, while also, you know, being fiscally responsible here and making sure we're setting ourselves up for the future, for future budget, you know, years. We're trying not to think of this as a one-time, this is, you know, a reduction that we have to do this year, and then, you know, next. We're trying to think years ahead that we can make these changes and move forward here and be all right. So that's – but we're absolutely, you know, putting resources to those areas in Midtown of Anchorage.
Thank you. Representative Stamp.
Can we do brief at ease, Chair?
We can. We'll be at ease briefly at 1:50.
I do too. But you're fair. That's fair.
Representative Stapp for the team.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Justin, through the chair to our wonderful folks at DOT. Thanks for being here. Started off with quite a bang on to slide two already, hadn't we? So my kind of thoughts here, really relatively simply, how many deputy commissioners do you have at DOT currently? And when you talk about restructuring, what structure are you actually proposing? I kind of flipped through the slide deck, and I didn't see any of that in there. So can you just maybe tell me how many deputy commissioners do you have, what do they do, and what structure are you thinking about through the chair?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, we have one deputy commissioner at DOT, and she is sitting right next to me now. And so what we're trying to do is, I mean, we're taking that look across. We want to make sure frontline services are solid, and so we're making those our decisions here on how we restructure, you know, based on resourcing in those areas. When the other pieces that we're working on with the restructure is really to take some of these positions, like a regional director, and make functional directors. So you would have a design and construction director that's just really focusing on capital programs, and then also a maintenance and operations director for the whole state that would really focus on maintenance and operations across the state. And so, and the idea there is we have a lot of really great things happening in silos across the state, and we're getting better at making sure all those ideas are shared and people, you know, are moving on things. And this is just a structural way to keep that going.
A fault, Mr. Fletcher. Follow-up,
Rep. Stamp.
Yeah, so kind of the reason, obviously we have, you know, three different DOT regions, and they all are kind of subdivided, and, you know, that kind of structure makes it easy for us here at the Finance Committee to be able to kind of determine, one, where the money is going, and two, like how the efficacy of the projects, and three, if there's kind of a level of fairness and distribution of them. And I guess, you know, you have a really big responsibility and big job, Commissioner, you know? I mean, I think everyone here, like, we all love the DOT, right? We want the projects to be efficient and delivered. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your zeal and reductions of your own staff vacancies, but I really don't want to do anything that harms your ability to, you know, get projects out the door and provide safety. And if you think you can do all this work with just yourself and one deputy commissioner, I mean, more power to you. I guess my fear is that you might not be here forever, Commissioner, and, like, if we make these changes to your structure, like, are we harming future DOT stuff through the chair?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, those are great questions, and, yeah, there's no qualms. I mean, I hope I'm not here forever because that would be a long time. Okay? But the idea here is we can where the work happens is in the regions, and the regions don't change. And I'm going to, again, point back to those Engineer 5, Range 27s that oversee our capital programs, and they oversee our the entirety of it. And so what we've heard from some of our staff, like let's take the maintenance and operations folks, for example, is there's a lot of inconsistencies. And I hear it from people across the state, including legislators, about, hey, how come this is getting done this certain way in this region, or it's getting done this way in this region, or how come this rule is getting interpreted in this way in this region, and then it's getting interpreted differently in this way in this region. And even on the AGC front, you know, we've heard from them, we've talked this through with them, and they want to give it a try too, because even on the contractual side, you know, we've heard that, hey, when we're out negotiating a change order with this region, it works like this, but with this region, it works like this. So really, this is our approach to solve some of those inconsistencies. But we do believe that, you know, we've got talented people in those classified ranks, and, you know, I think this is a positive thing for them. We're going through an exercise right now of delegations and authorities and responsibilities, which is healthy for an organization. And that part of this is, you know, pushing down some of those authorities and delegations to the lowest levels. And that's what we hear from a lot of folks, the contractors world and whatnot, too, of what people want. Faster decision making, those types of things. So this approach is to get at some of that, too, as well.
And a final follow-up, Mr.
Yes,
Richard.
Final follow-up, Rep. Stamp.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair. I appreciate the thought, and again, I'm going to kind of, just for the future, Commissioner, like kind of my fear when you talk about kind of standardization and removing kind of the silos, I'm kind of worried about where do we pipeline a new commissioner and a new deputy commissioner from in the event we don't have this kind of pyramid structure in place. Right, so how do you have the institutional knowledge, and how do you, you know, to be able to organize? Because I appreciate the streamlining a lot, right? But again, my fear is how does the next DOT commissioner know how to run DOT if there's no kind of subdivisions throughout the organization through the chair?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, there's, I mean, again, talented people running capital programs already, running the maintenance and operations. Yeah, I guess the institutional knowledge is there. A lot of, you know, the role of the commissioner is that bigger picture oversight, the problem solving, the elevation of conflict, you know, really those things. And then, you know, just the leadership of an organization. So, you know, I think from that perspective and the institutional knowledge, I mean, typically commissioners, you know, they have a limited lifespan. So you know, the institutional knowledge is typically limited. I'm a little different because I've been with DOT over 25 years now, so I've grown up there. So that may make me think a little bit differently about how, you know, we want to change things. But that's, yeah, I would think with the staff and the talented individuals we have, the institutional knowledge is there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Representative Allard, do you have a question?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and through the chair. So I'm gonna line these questions up, and they're gonna go somewhere. Can you tell me about, is the equivalent population of individuals and size in each region equivalent?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard.
Mission.
So if I understand you correctly, is it a commensurate reduction based on the population of the region? Is that kind of what your question is?
It would be more is Fairbanks comparable to Anchorage based on you divided that northern region in a northern region, then you have Juneau, Ketchikan as a region, and the work and the overall mission for each region is equivalent. They might have different missions, but equivalent as far as time, persons, place.
Through the chair, yeah, Representative Allard. Okay, so when you look at northern region, which is the Fairbanks area, for example, less people but more road miles. They have the most road miles,
yep.
And so you'll find that. The Anchorage area, of course, the central region, which goes out in the Kenai and actually goes out into the Bethel region, the most people, but they don't have as many road miles. They have less districts, maintenance, because we're also divided up into regions and then maintenance districts. And so there. And then when you get down into southeast Alaska, we have a smaller program. I think they have two maintenance districts. They actually, when they did the changes years ago with the region adjustments, you know, they took southeast and they combined it with way west, meaning the Aleutians in that area as well. So they take on that. So they're all unique, and they are resourced differently, whereas in the northern region you'll see a bigger maintenance and operations team, smaller design and construction team. In Anchorage you'll have a bigger design and construction team, smaller maintenance team. In South Coast both teams are a bit smaller.
Okay, and these are just quick questions, and the commissioner could just answer them quickly. It's fine.
Go ahead, Rep.
Thank you. So when you say you have Range 27 engineers, they're very experienced individuals. So just having one deputy commissioner, does that deputy commissioner kind of oversee those Range 27s to where they're kind of, I mean, they're running it, the show. So they absolutely know what they're doing. Am I correct on stating that?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard. Yes, you're correct.
Okay. And then the last one is...
last question, Rep. Allard for
thank you.
DOT.
Who is your boss and that you answer to maybe come together with saying that we want to reorganize, this is the way we need to do it? Who's your actual boss that would agree that this needs to happen within the budget that you work for?
Yeah.
I'm eager to hear this one.
Me too.
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Allard. Yeah, the governor is my boss.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Let's after 30 minutes, let's go to slide 3.
For the record, Don Pannone, moving to slide 3, this is another significant organizational change, though there's no direct change within DOT's budget. This is a transition of 32 positions from the Department of Administration for DOT to take on payroll, accounts payable, and travel and travel-related expenses. This is essentially moving these responsibilities back to the department after approximately almost 10 years. In 2018, we moved 35 positions to the Department of Administration to establish shared services. This transfer, we view this as extremely positive, as we will have direct control and prioritization of the work, and we're going to continue the work on improving our payroll practices. A couple years back, we took on Alaska Marine Highway payroll with three of the most complicated collective bargaining agreement and unions payroll contracts in the state. So this will raise our payroll staff to be handling approximately 8 union payrolls for the largest department in the executive branch.
Okay. And I think Rep. Stapp said it right, or said it the best, that incoming governor should have a laminated fixed placard that says, don't try that again. I know this wasn't your department, but it's the ping pong of centralization and decentralization. Not a question for me, certainly. Slide four.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Slide four is a recent classification study. That's a study of the job classes that are information technology, all the types of jobs that an information technology person does within the state, recently reclassified a number of salary ranges and several. It also modernized a number of job classes where we would have microcomputer specialists, and we now have business application developers and modern role position descriptions. So these increases are salary adjustments associated with those increases.
Okay. Slide five.
Slide five is a couple of new components that we want in our operating budget. So these are statewide components. The first is a $1.7 million allocation of designated general funds for guardrail and roadside hardware repair. It adds a single component so that when guardrail is damaged, we can restore that to an effective safety device on the roadside. It's crucial that we keep these systems in good repair. Otherwise, they become roadside hazards and can essentially become dangers to the traveling public. So these funds will allow us to address the growing backlog of guardrail repair statewide. The second component is a flexible component to support wayside maintenance, so expanding the services we provide at waysides, including vegetation clearing, refuse management, and sanitary services, as well as snow removal and facility repairs.
Okay. And very briefly, just the brief version, Director, why is the statewide guardrail and roadside hardware repair an operating item? I'm not going to challenge it. I just curiosity.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this happens as a matter of regular business. And so when we're unable to recover or identify who or what damaged guardrail, it's part of our maintenance and operations.
Okay.
When the damage occurs within a capital project, we will restore the guardrail within a capital project, but these would be locations outside of a capital project.
I think I understand. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Justice, and through the Chair, appreciate you bringing this item forward. Of all the items that I get as a representative from the public, this is one of them that I'm saying is in the top two when I get phone calls about guardrail and guardrail repair and disrepair of guardrails. I know in the larger places like maybe Anchorage or Fairbanks, this might not be something that's readily visible, but when you live on a small island like Revilla where Ketchikan is and we've got one highway, when a guardrail is damaged, it remains damaged for years sometimes. So I'm glad this brought forward. But here's my question on this. What mechanism are we putting in place for the public to engage with issues like this and other DOT issues for them to not only report the problem, but to then get a satisfactory response? Because what happens is Rep. Bynum becomes the curation center of all these complaints, and then I become the in-between. And now I'm happy to take complaints from my constituents. That's partially what I'm here for. But I think there should probably be a better mechanism from DOT to do better engagement with the public with regard to these types of problems. So is that something that's in as part of this program? And if not, what am I missing?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the Chair, Representative Bynum, yeah, thank you for the question. And it really doesn't – it's across the state, these problems. Whether you're in Ketchikan or Fairbanks, you know, we had a real struggle in Fairbanks last year. These guardrail end treatments, the ones you see on the end with the yellow and black stripes, those are about $400,000 a piece to replace because they're very specifically designed to mitigate a head-on a vehicle crash. And so when they do get damaged, you know, there's always this decision, and we have to replace these things. It's a safety, absolutely safety seal. So, and we have ways we classify them and make sure that we're doing a good job there. When it comes to the actual reporting, We do have online now where you can, members of the public can go on and report events. They can report problems on the roadway, and we'll be certain to get the committee here of the links to that. Those are things that we check on a regular basis so people can have that direct access to our DOT team and get those done. So that's something we work as well. The other piece on this is, you know, we do have programs where we are going for collections when there's crashes, and there's been a lot of guardrail damage, you know, by all sorts of vehicles, and we do go out and try to recoup those losses through insurance companies and whatnot as well. So we're trying to hit the guardrail piece on multiple fronts.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Slide 6.
For the record, Don Pannone. Slide 6 outlines 3 budget increases the department and the governor are requesting. The first is a restoration of $5.2 million of UGF in our maintenance and operations components. This funding was removed from our operating budget in the current year that we're in the current fiscal year in the prior legislative appropriation process. The logic behind this, or the reasoning that the department received, was that we could reduce our statewide equipment fleet costs by roughly 10%, as well as leverage operating budget surpluses that would have theoretically been created by a low snow accumulation winter. Neither of those reasonings panned out in our budget. We did not have a surplus in our maintenance and operations budget at the end of the last year that carried forward, and we were not able to reduce our statewide equipment fleet costs by another 10%. Lower here in the slide, you can see that we had already done that in 2017 by 20%, and again in 2018 by another 20%. So we've expanded equipment life as much as possible, and that was not a realizable reduction for us. The other two requests are the restoration from what were presumably one-time fund substitutes back to unrestricted general funds in our operating budget. So the bottom two are a net zero back to a stable fund source, and the first one is a restoration of funds within our operating budget.
Okay. So your point as to FY 17 and 18 is that we've been down this lane before, and I assume it didn't work on reducing the fleet replacement in those years terribly well. And you're saying, I think you're saying it's not workable.
Mr. Chairman, what the department is saying is we did extend the life drastically for replacement rates to the maximum extent possible, and that this final request to extend it once more was not realizable, not possible.
Okay. Okay. All right. I don't see any questions.
All right. Moving to slide 7. This is four budget requests. The first is for our Northern Highways and Aviation Maintenance and Operations component. It's an increase of $52,000 of rural airport receipts. This is to pay an ongoing multi-year tariff to pay for utility electrical company improvements that they are billing us and several of their customers for. So this will be a recurring annual item. The second is for a Gustavus law enforcement coverage for our seasonal jet service to Gustavus. It's a requirement that we have armed law enforcement at this airport in order to have the passenger service. The third here, statewide aviation abandoned building on lease lots. We're requesting to use $160,000 of rural airport receipts to continue to remove and mitigate abandoned buildings and create more opportunities to lease that space for airport purposes or other revenue-generating purposes for our rural airports. And the last is a $250,000 request for right-of-way encroachment and homeless camp abatement, in which we would use our right-of-way receipts that we receive for permitting and any other proceeds from right-of-ways.
Okay. So you answered my question there with the source of the DGF. I understand that denuding part of Anchorage's trees is effective in abating camps. It's god-awful unsightly. Where can we expect this abatement to occur with these dollars?
Yeah, Chair Josephson, it's really, we've built policies for homeless camp abatement so that we have a structured way now when there's a report to us from the public or, you know, from law enforcement or even our staff that are out working in areas that, you know, we assess the situation. We determine if there's a safety risk to the public, particularly a lot of times these, for us, it's within the right-of-way, so these are adjacent to our highways. And getting to Representative Galvin's point is, you know, the safety piece. This is another strategy for us on the pedestrian safety front to make sure that we're doing a good job there. So we couldn't tell you where these things they happen in areas. There's not a good way for us to predict, but what we are saying is we want to be responsive. And so when these complaints come through, you know, we'll use our policies and we'll go address the situation.
Okay. But for example, near my home, if I can be parochial, at Tudor and the New Surat Highway, so this would be the northeast corner, there's a vast forest that's just gone. I assume that's state land. What's the plan? Is it just to say this will be a vacant field forevermore? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know I don't know how effective it was to play whack-a-mole with homeless in that way. Do you have any comment about that?
Yeah, Chair Josephson, for the record, Catherine Keith, I'm the Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Yeah, that location, it was certainly a safety risk for those at the encampment. There have been fatalities with individuals crossing Seward Highway right at that Tudor intersection. So the goal of that was to ensure that DOT's right-of-ways, our property there, was safe, that it didn't pose additional threats to the public there. Same thing on 36 and Seward Highway as well, that had an encampment on all four quadrants. So when we do go about a clearing, we do so in very close coordination with the municipality of Anchorage, other nonprofits in the area, the state troopers. So there's a lot of conversations that lead up to that to identify what actions need to be taken, which are best deferred. And when parties are in alignment, then we do move forward and just take on that responsibility seriously. Having funding to be able to do some greenscaping beyond that would certainly be desirable, but for us that first step needs to be ensuring the safety and clearing the right-of-ways.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Rep. Galvin, then Stamp.
Thank you. I appreciate this conversation. I think that you know, safety of all is what's important. And I just wondered, in that conversation, did you include, you said that you work with the municipality. Are you also working within the local communities wherein these changes would be held? I think about community councils and things like that. I'm not sure how you go with those conversations, but I'm sure that there would probably be requests also for other things like lighting or maybe even making sure that in the larger roads where it's not a highway, but perhaps in that area we also need to make sure there are safe crossings and things like that. I haven't heard about those conversations, so if you could enlighten us to know that whether or not there's other conversations also being held in addition to scooping out the camps and the trees and things like that, I think it's helpful for all of us to hear.
Yeah, the Chair.
DC Keith.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. Yeah, excellent question. We do have, as we're developing that policy and procedure Commissioner mentioned, that would be a good one to tie into that, honestly. We do work and rely on the municipalities process. Their HOPE team does a fantastic job with community outreach and providing that feedback for, you know, what it is, where folks may be interested in going, mm-hmm. what facilities have vacancies, and they help work with us in that capacity. And so we certainly could and should do more outreach with the councils leading up to that, and that when we do have time, especially if it's not an immediate hazard. But meanwhile, our partnerships with the HOPE team have aided with that and connecting us with nonprofits and others that are seeking to help ensure the best outcome possible. But meanwhile, other practices, lighting, fencing, those are all things we want to keep looking at.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, Rep. Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. Justin, through the chair to Deputy Commissioner. Thanks for being here. So regarding the right-of-way and homeless camp abatement, I mean, did the municipality actually want you guys to do this? Is that like coming request directly from municipality of Anchorage? I know there's overlap here in shared responsibilities of highways, and we're talking specifically about basically property that DOT maintains. But does the municipality ask you to do these abatements through the chair?
Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. I don't want to speak generally about that, but at these specific locations, yes, they have had many safety concerns. The city police have responded to instances that if it's our land, not their property, they need authority to be able to go on and help with any remediation. So in this case, yes, they did, and we'll just have to continue working with them in that way.
Yeah, fault in the scripture.
Follow-up Rep. Stapp for DC Keith.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to DC Keith. So just the reason I asked the question is, I think, you know, all the questions regarding councils and public and stuff, I mean, to me, I don't know if you guys do this, you says, hey, the municipality of Anchorage asked us to abate this homeless camp, right? So I would think that, like, then people would know that, hey, you're doing these things not willy-nilly or not cutting people's trees down, that, hey, you're actually doing these things because the MOA is itself requesting. And, I mean, I know in Fairbanks, I think we did a similar thing. We had a camp outside the GARS, and, I mean, our mayor at the time wanted to get rid of that thing post-haste, and you guys were great. So I've seen you work really well. So I'm just curious, maybe we can, I don't know, communicate that more efficiently, that these are things that are at the request of municipalities through the chair.
Okay. Slide 8. Question from Rep. Allard, however.
Thank you. So, through the chair, I'm just trying to get clarification here. Are you saying that the homeless camps are on top of state land that DOT owns?
Yeah.
DC Keith.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, occasionally yes, and they're also within the right-of-way that is overseen by the Department of Transportation.
May I do a quick follow-up?
Yes, you may.
So are you saying you don't call the troopers and APD won't come in, but the municipality, the mayor, doesn't do anything about it? She wants you guys to do it?
Deputy Commissioner Keith.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard. It's a combination and really situationally dependent. Clearing the right-of-way encampment, removing any property, then at that point, if it is state property, we do provide permission. But it is case by case, depending on what is happening at that time. But yes, the troopers, the municipal police, ourselves, we coordinate on the best step forward. But unilaterally, they would reach out to the state before taking any action on the property.
May I just do one last follow-up, please?
Yes.
Thank
last
you, Chair.
Last follow-up, Rep. Allard for DC Keith.
So this is, you're talking about the tents and all the debris. What about the humans? Are you guys, I'm not on board with that. Is the municipality of Anchorage stating, DOT, this is your property, you got to handle the homeless individuals, we're not going to do it, and if we're going to do it, you need to call APD and then you need to put in a request? Is that what's going on right now?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard, our process in doing any removals, any encampment clearing, it's staged, so we'll put up notices and signs letting people know that in a certain number of days, 21 days, 7 days at different iterations, that we will be going and clearing the site. We don't have enforcement authority, so anything that does have to do with individuals, if they do not choose to leave of their own accord, then we do so in coordination with the city police and or the troopers. The challenge is staffing, of course. They struggle with staffing as much as any other organization. So the timing and how we and when we take actions is done in coordination with them. Sometimes it's we try to keep things in sync. So
thank you. Just a quick comment. So what I hear, Chair, and others to the committee and to the public, is that the mayor of the municipality can't clear or provide housing to individuals that are what I would consider homeless, and now she's pushing the burden on state resources because she can't clean her own city. All right. Thank you, Chair.
I didn't hear that, but we hear different things sometimes.
I just heard that, but okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. So let's go to slide 8.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dom Pannone. Slide 8 outlines 2 budget requests. The first is for the state equipment fleet. DOT is responsible for all vehicles in the executive branch, not only those at DOT, but all the other executive branches as well, or the departments within the executive branch. This request is for $500,000 of highway equipment working capital fund. The reason we're requesting additional funds is to create an option for when recruitment at remote locations for heavy equipment. When we have those vacancies, this additional authority provides the option for us to contract that work out. We, as DOT, would prefer to have qualified long-term mechanics on our staff. If we chose to simply contract that out, we would have to reduce our vacancies, possibly delete positions. But as a matter of decision, we decided we wanted to keep the positions, have the budget authority to be able to recruit for those positions, and in the event we are unsuccessful, be able to contract for remote heavy equipment maintenance services.
Question from Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. So specifically with this item, I mean, obviously you want to have your own mechanics, people that are very well versed in the region that they're working in. In the event that you don't have those, you're saying you want to be able to put out for a contract to do that contracted work. Functionally, what do you see as how that is going to work long term? So specifically, would you continue your recruitment? And if so, when you hired somebody to fill that position, would these contracts then not be used? Or can you explain a little bit of like what your philosophy on use of this type of a contractual mechanism would be?
Sure.
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, great question. So the idea behind this is, okay, so if we're short on staff and let's say you get these big snow events, equipment takes a beating and we typically see increased downtime. And so to have this flexibility to, you know, quickly say contract, you know, get that support, get the equipment fixed, you know, it's really that kind of plus up when we're short staffed. I think our example of success on these types of things is right now we're contracting out snow removal. And so if you go to Anchorage or Fairbanks, even down here in Juneau, we have contracts for when we have big storm events that we can bring on contractors to help our staff. A lot of times what we do is we go to the priority threes or fours with the contractors, so those get cleared, you know, quickly. And then our folks stay on the ones and twos. And so that's been a real help for those events. And what we're finding in that situation is we've been doing it for 3 years now. And contractors are starting to build up a nice equipment sets to be able to be responsive. And when we started out, you know, we were bringing up road graders, you know, to do snow removal and things because they just weren't set up. Now they're getting set up. And so, you know, that has been a nice, you know, way to show that this contracting, you know, methodology works. And so we would continue that with the statewide mechanic contracting support. If we can do this and it shows that, you know, we're seeing better uptime on our equipment. A lot of times when, you know, we have these struggles on these snow events and people aren't seeing us out there, you start doing the deep dive and, you know, we've got a lot of equipment down. It happened in Anchorage with the snowblowers. I mean, it's a fact. And so this is the idea here is, like anything else, we have a group of contractors that can help us plus up, you know, our resource when needed.
Okay. Follow-up, Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice. And for clarity, as Director of Utility, I had my own mechanics, but we would get overrun sometimes with down trucks or whatever, or need to focus our efforts. So what we would do is we go to Westside Auto Mechanics or All American, and we would contract out specific work. But it wasn't continuous ongoing. It was for overflow work when needed. So what I heard you saying is basically like you're exploring this idea of moving to a contractual mechanism for doing maintenance and kind of seeing how that's going to work, as opposed to using it in the event that you're not able to hire your own staff. And so I just want clarity on what the intention actually is with this particular item.
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, I think what we recognize is we're in this fiscally constrained environment where we're not expecting to get more staff. But I think as we've been experiencing, the demands on DOT have been higher than ever in terms of whether it's these events. I mean, we had the Dalton Highway closed for 2.5 days, just got opened at 5 a.m. this morning because of a big snowstorm event. And so the use of contractors, I mean, even if we were fully staffed but we get overwhelmed by these events, we want that capability because we'll have a certain number of folks, and we have been struggling on the mechanic side, especially heavy duty, so we want to make sure we cover ourselves there. So I think, you know, we want to be flexible with this, so in any of those situations, we'd have that capability to utilize a model like this.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph, and through the chair. I appreciate demands have been higher than ever. It concerns me when I saw the first slide and all of the adjustments you're making, cuts in order to fit into the box of our budget. So you're in a tight spot. And I guess my question is around, I thought we had a Snowmageddon fund of some sort, an emergency fund. And so my question is, why wouldn't this $500,000 fit into that? And if you need us to increase that fund, would that be just as effective?
Director Pannone.
For the record, yeah, Tom Pannone. Through the chair, Representative Galvin, you are correct. We regularly ask for a capital appropriation that is usually supplementals. It's usually a reappropriation of old closed project funds. I believe this year we're seeking over $4 million for that fund that you mentioned. And that fund can pay for over time or responses to significant snow events. This authority here is for Highway Equipment Working Capital Fund. So this would give the statewide equipment fleet the direct budgetary authority. And they could charge that to the capital, to that capital fund if that was appropriate. But this provides a stable mechanism for us to be able to use this methodology, use this model to up our resources when required.
Thank you. I'm still a little bit fuzzy on it, but I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's pivot now to... Yes. Sarah, apologize. Rep. Hannon for the DOT team.
Thank you, Rep. Josephson. And I thought I'd just, because I served on the subcommittee, try to thread a couple pieces together that I think might help explain this. Mm-hmm. That when we, the legislature, in 2017 and 2018 directed the department to extend the life of the equipment to more years of use before it's depreciated fully and goes out for sale, with that, there are increased maintenance costs along that way. The department has, and Dom will correct me, previously been able to use personnel costs when we had vacancies in maintenance positions to pay for that maintenance. But we are now seeing, 10 years into this stretching out the equipment, even when we have the personnel hired, the maintenance person, we still have more maintenance on aged equipment then we have the budget for the maintenance. And so this will help allow us to keep the personnel line item for a maintenance person and still have money to get that grader back on the road by contracting out to get that piece of equipment operational as soon as possible.
Mr. Pannone, did she get that pretty close?
Through the chair, I think that's a fair account of the request. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Now we will go to the Marine Highway System. Quite the pivot. So take it away. Director Pannone.
Again, for the record, Don Pannone. Another request in the governor's budget, and it was something we requested last year as well, but did not make it through the legislative process, is a change to the structure of the Marine Highway budget. And that's going from a single calendar year constrained annual appropriation to a multi-year appropriation that has a single year of funding in it. And what that does is it does allow us to stay on the calendar year. It still allows the legislature to appropriate 1 year of funding at a time, but gives us the flexibility between years to shift funds, access funds of the next year sooner, or carry any excess funds over to the next year. It also allows us to eliminate the duplicate financial book closeout that we have to do given the fiscal year and calendar year appropriations we have currently. So it provides essentially provides flexibility for the Marine Highway System. It was supported by the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, and what this will do specifically this year, and we'll talk about it on the next slide, is it will help us bridge the gap between the time in which we receive the federal grant for the current fiscal year, and we'll talk about that as part of our bridge plan. But this model and this function would be integral to bridging that gap.
Okay. Slide 10.
As a precursor to our next slide, which talks about the bridge plan, this outlines the current year, the calendar year 2026 operating budget, and the revenue shortfall. Our current budget is $170.7 million. Within that, we have $77.9 million of federal authority appropriated. That's roughly 45.6% of our overall budget. This budget was predicated upon receiving a grant from the Federal Transit Administration with a program that we had been receiving for 3 years prior now. It was the Service for Rural Communities Ferry Grant Program. That program did not release a notice of funding opportunity in the last spring or fall, and that's created this revenue shortfall or this gap in the current fiscal year. And we're going to talk about how we're solving that on our next slide.
Okay. Slide 11.
Okay, for the record, Brian Anderson, Commissioner of DOT. Chair Josephson, so Mr. Andy Mills and myself went to Washington, D.C. last week. We met with the majority of transportation administrators, the Federal Highway Administration, the Federal Aviation Administration, Federal Rail Administration, the Marine Administration, so that we were down there on a mission to hit all of our transportation needs. But we met with the entirety of our congressional delegation. The one that was for the Ferry Service for Rural Communities program, that's the Federal Transit Administration. Their administrator had resigned recently, so we weren't able to meet with their administrator, but we met with the administrator's staff, and we met with the Ferry Service for Rural Communities program staff to discuss, our challenge here. What they told us, and, we tried to ask, so why the delay? And, they would refer to staff shortages and, those types of things. But what they assured us was that the notice of funding opportunity will go out in March. And as we talked through the timelines, they said, well, when you could expect a award would be August or September. So we talked about ways that it potentially could be accelerated. Some of their concerns, they are going to put out the notice for the full $410 million. So there'll be one notice of funding opportunity, one final one for this program, for this bill. And the other piece was that they have other programs that are going to be combined with this. So it's not just going to be a solicitation for the Rural Ferry Program, but there'll be other programs mixed in as well. We've had subsequent conversations since this week, and you know we're going to move to accelerate those timelines, you know, and work with our congressional delegation, work with you know the governor's office to see how quickly you know we would prefer that they could award it in July, but we'll let we do have a plan, whether it's awarded in August or September, to get us through, and so I'll let Mr. Director Pannone go through the plan with everyone.
Director.
For the record, Don Pannone. So currently looking at our budget, we have a number of state funds on hand. And with the state funds we have, we can continue operations unaltered through July. And at that point, if we were to receive the award in August, we could essentially, in July, borrow $14.9 million of revenue from our fiscal year 27 budget and then push the federal authority that we replace into the following year. So basically trade authorities with the following budget in the waterfall model, and that would allow us to increase the Fed in calendar year 27 and increase the AMHS fund in the current calendar year 2026 to bridge into the federal grant and then complete the rest of the year, September through December, on the federal grant. If we received, in the second scenario, the grant in September, our exposure, that is the amount that we would need to cover, would be $29.8 million. So again, with that waterfall budget structure, we could cover approximately $20 million with AMHS revenue funds, shifting the Fed with the AMHS revenue between the 2 years, swapping them. And then we'd look to use Federal Highway Administration ferry boat funds, a different program, to cover the roughly $10 million gap created in that second scenario. So in both these scenarios, we're relying on up to $19 million of being able to swap fund types that is allowed by the waterfall model. And in the second, we'd be looking to tap into some additional federal highway funds to assist with bridging the gap.
Rep. Stamp.
Yeah, I think Gojir Justin, through the chair, to Director Pannone or Commissioner or even Deputy Commissioner. So thanks for telling us this kind of shell game that we're going to use federal money from the IJA to fund our operations on the marine highway system. So this is my fourth year in this building, and I have not been presented with any reliable plan to try to make the ferry system somewhat operationally viable. And I'm curious, what our actual operating loss on the ferry marine highway system is, like without the federal money. So how much underwater on strictly operating are we on the ferry system through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the marine highway system in the last financial report had roughly, $160 million in operating expenses and had about $33 million in revenue. We had, I'll have to look at the report closer, but I believe it was roughly $60 million of Fed in our operating.
So yeah, follow up, Mr. Gochir.
Follow up, Rep. Staff for Director Pannone.
Yeah, no, that's a sufficient enough answer, Director. I mean, so we're $130 million in the red operating the marine highway system. We operate it because we get this beautiful bunch of Fed money. So, like, do we have any strategy and plan whatsoever to not be $130 million in the red operating the marine highway? That's like before vessel capital replacement, all that type of stuff, through the chair.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I think we have a significant plan, and it's the long-range plan. We've got a number of strategies, longer roads and shorter routes, but we have a long-range plan that talks about how to make the system more financially viable, more efficient on the operating budget. And I don't know if we need anything to add anything else to that.
Yeah, follow-up.
Yes, follow-up.
Yeah, I mean, does it 10x the revenue through the chair?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
I said, does it 10x the revenue? I mean, so we have a, we are operating revenues $30 million. We are spending $130 million, $160 million. So my question is, your long-term plan, does it net us an additional $130 million a year to operate the Marine Highway System through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the long-range plan doesn't increase our revenue tenfold. It does look to optimize revenue and maximize the amount of revenue the system gets to bring it closer in alignment with what the type of revenue that other ferry systems are receiving.
Follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow-up. Rep. Stapp.
Can I get a little bit more specific answer through the chair? I mean, are we going to lower our expenditures by $100 million? Are we going to lower our expenditures by $30 million when we do this? Because saying we're going to make it more efficient sounds great, but what is that actually? What does the math actually look like through the chair?
Director, with apologies.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. I guess I can't. The plan doesn't articulate every dollar, and every year the budget's subject to appropriation. It outlines a strategy that the state can take to reduce operating costs. And I think I'd have to follow up. Have to do a follow up if we needed specific figures and excerpts from that plan.
Just final follow up, Mr. Coacher.
Final follow up, Rep. Stapp. Then we'll go to Rep. Bynum.
Yeah, through the chair to Director Pinone. Yeah. So the reason I asked the line of questions, Director, is I think it's wonderful that the feds have given us a ton of money so we can operate a marine highway system. My concern is, especially with the delay in the grant. Even request for the grant, like we are going to be in a position where we have a big bill that we are going to struggle to pay long term unless we find innovative ways to make our marine highway system more efficient. Because, again, right now, $130 million operating loss is a massive operating loss. I mean, I don't even think the general funds in your budget are like that high at the bare bones capital budget from last fiscal year, right? So I don't even think we had $130 million in general funds in your capital budget for that type of stuff through traditional fund sources. And my concern is, I mean, we are very lucky and blessed to have our congressional delegation be able to award us this funding, but as soon as we burn through the amount of available revenue for operating ferry system, then what do we do? You know what I mean? Like, what do we actually do? How do we actually provide this service to residents in Southeast Alaska through the chair?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, I think those are all fair questions. You know, so the focus right now with the plan really is to reduce operating costs. So build new ferries. We have the Tustamina replacement vessel on up for construction right now. It's on the bid calendar. So that will be a significant savings in costs, you know, with a new vessel. I think when you go through the long-range plan, that is one of the strategies is these old vessels are expensive. They take a lot of time for overhauls. It costs us a fair amount just in that regard. So, you know, getting the fleet modernized is important on that aspect. And then, we're upgrading. We have 11 docks right now that we're working to not only replace aging infrastructure, but also making sure all the docks are compatible with all the ships so that we can move things around to make things more efficient and do the best we can at that. And then I think the other piece is just this idea of the shorter ferry runs. I think that provides more flexibility, more reliability. And it's been talked about. I mean, there was a 2004 Southeast plan that had that proposal to build roads because, you know, we know roads are less expensive to operate than ferries. And so all of those things. I don't think there was any statements in the plan that someday it wouldn't that it would be, you know, 100% a net zero operation in terms of you know, expenses and revenue. But, you know, doing the best we can. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the chair. Just on that line, I appreciate my colleague from Fairbanks' questions on this particular matter, but you kind of answered a little bit, but I did want clarity from you. Was the Marine Highway System ever intended to operate as a net neutral position from a funding perspective from the state?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, you know, that Yeah, I wouldn't know the answer to that question. I think that's a good one. We could go back and look. I know there's a pretty rich history for the Marine Highway System in Southeast Alaska, and it definitely, you know, there's a public purpose that it serves. But yeah, for that specific answer, I would have to do some research.
Yeah. Follow up.
Follow up, Rep. Bynum.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Going back to 1963, there's been federal support and recognition of it being our being a transit system for not only Alaska but for federal highways, and even through 1978, the Surface Transportation Assistance Act put directive capital money into making sure that we had the ability to build vessels. And then further in 1995, the National Highway System Designation Act of 1995 put in place that the Alaska Marine Highway was routes as part of the National Highway System. So this is part of our highway system down here in Southeast Alaska, and I think it is a very vital part of our connection between our communities. I think as we go further into this plan, we're going to have some real serious questions about what our priorities are with trying to make sure that this system is operational and reliable for our Southeast communities. But with that being said, is there any other highways in the state that don't rely on federal dollars to become operational and that are net neutral in expenses?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. I mean, so we spend on our highway system too. We have capital programs that we have federal performance metrics and we meet those. There wouldn't be any. Well, I shouldn't say that. There are probably some very rural roads out there that have been built by, let's say, miners or others that have not been had any funds spent by the state of Alaska or the federal government. But that would be all I can think of.
Okay, Rep. Hannon.
Okay.
Representative Bynum largely asked my questions, but I'll ask Mr. Pignon. I understand that we have one toll road in Alaska. Can you tell me how much the Whittier Road generates annually towards the cost of operation of the road system in Alaska?
Director.
Through the chair, for the record, Don Pignon, through the chair, Representative Hannon. The Whittier Tunnel, I don't have the exact figure. It varies. I believe it's roughly $2 million in toll receipts, and the operating costs are somewhere between $6 and $8 million annually.
Thank you.
Okay. I've been to this debate before. all right. This is the sequel, I guess. So, slide 12.
Okay, for the record, Ryan Anderson. This is just a slide on our infrastructure modernization strategy, and this is based on the 2045 plan. What you'll see here is, you know, we have this push on fleet recapitalization. You know, our average fleet age is 40 years. This is the Tustamina replacement vessel being out to bid. You know, we have the Tazalina is going to be going out to bid to have the crew quarters installed. We're going to be doing some work on the Columbia for modernization, and we have this low no emissions ferry that we're working through right now, and that would be a new ferry build as well. And then where we'd like to be is with one more mainliner replacement. That's really where, you know, Southeast Alaska needs to be. One thing I want to point out, and this is important on all of these, is how we're, you know, really leveraging funds from all areas that we can from the federal government. So, of course, the FTA 71-103, that's the Rural Ferry Program funds, and so we've been making the most of those. We also have FH, Federal Highway Administration Ferry Boat Funds, formula funds that we use for these. And then we have toll credits, which have been a big benefit for us. Mr. Pignon started, he devised the toll credit program, and we've actively, you know, made that a success. On the terminal side, we have 11 active ferry terminal projects statewide, and you can see there's various forms of funding as well. PIDP is the Port Infrastructure Development Program, and that's run by the Marine Administration. And we have the Federal Transit Administration dock projects, and you can see those listed. And then we also have Federal Highway Administration projects as well. And again, that's just we're trying to build out the system so we have more compatibility with all our docks, and then, you know, replacing the aging infrastructure. And then The third piece is just system efficiency. And this is where we have longer roads and shorter ferry crossings. This is where you hear, you know, where we're working on projects like Cascade Point. And then we have these other targeted road extensions that were listed in the AMHS 2045 plan, Cake to Petersburg, Sitka Access, and Tenneke Huna. And again, you know, looking at different ways to fund those is going to be important, leveraging across the board on all fronts. And so that's really, you know, how we're looking at this right now. There's a lot of good projects that are active, and, you know, we're making progress here on getting these things to construction.
Commissioner, before we leave the slides on the ferry system, I'm guessing, I mean, our capacity to appropriate money we don't have is obviously limited, but as to the receipt of the rural grants that you spoke of for rural communities, if those came in August or September, then and this may not be your expertise, but the LBNA committee could accept them on behalf of the legislature when we're out of session. Typically, the rule is, do we have something like it in the budget? Do we have, would we have any federal dollars in the Marine Highway budget that we could look to say, nope, this is just an expansion of something we're already doing? Director?
For the record, Don Pannone to the chair. The legislative authority for the current year, if we were to receive those grants, exists in our budget, and the authority for calendar year 27 or the FY27 multi-year appropriation contains $80 million of federal authority as well. So that authority is what we would use in receiving those grants.
All right. So we have budgetary language, and the LBNA would not have to your understanding, have to act.
Correct. It's just a matter of receiving the grant awards from the federal administration.
Okay. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Drosten, through the chair to Director Pannone. So just to be clear, on the calendar year timeframe, what is like the drop-dead date that we need to kind of receive this federal funding by before we actually have an operating cash crunch on the ferry system? Like what month would that happen? Say we don't receive 26's grant until, I don't know, next October or something. Would that be too late? I mean, would we have a problem since we're on a calendar year ratio through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, excellent question. So it depends on a couple of variables. If we operate without modifying our schedule in any way, and again, we're looking at cost-saving measures such as, you know, we're looking at holding the Matanuska, the costs in that, and possible disposal of that. But if we run the system as planned, as budgeted, to July, we are solvent until the end of July. At that point, if we do have the waterfall model in place, we would have that appropriation and would be able to go into either August or September. Beyond September, we would have to start modifying the way the system operates.
Follow-up, Mr.
Follow up.
And just to be
clear, staff for Director Pannone.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. Okay, so just to be clear, that is without any current schedule modification, right? So you wouldn't start to modify the schedule if you saw a cash crunch, because in my mind there is some sort of delay between when they actually put out the RFP and when they deliver the money. Like, I guess let's start there. What is that time frame when they actually put out the notice and then when the time to get the award through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, in the past three periods, it's ranged from roughly 190 days to 150 days from the notice of funding opportunity to the award announcement in which we can start charging the grant.
And follow-up.
Yes, folks.
And there is
staff for Director.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin. And there is no current notice of funding opportunity, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, we were informed there would be one in March by the Federal Transit Administration.
Followed, Mr.
Yes,
Coach. So that's cutting it a little close, right? I mean, if it's 150 days, 110, that's 3-4 months, right? So that puts us in basically August, right? So the second point of the question is going to be, is that September kind of drop-dead date as far as running out of operational cash Is that without making any kind of modifications to ridership, you know, to stop the stop kind of the operational catch bird? Let's say they don't put out the award until the first week of, or they don't put out the notification until the first week of May through the chair. What happens?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, this is an important piece of it because we absolutely have to keep the pressure on the Federal Transit Administration to make these dates that they have told us that they would make. But in the meantime, we're also taking steps where we can to reduce costs. So one of the things we've been discussing and we've said it in other hearings is disposing of the Matanuska, which is our hotel ship down in Ketchikan at the shipyard. That has an expensive operating cost. And so the sooner we can dispose of that, that takes that off the books. That extends our time a little bit. Another one is the Teslina. I mean, we need to get the Teslina into a capital project so that we can get the crew quarters going. The sooner we do that, the capital project, then it goes to the ship goes to a shipyard. We're not paying for tie down fees. We're not paying for the maintenance of that ship. So all of those strategies are what we're doing right now. Right now, we're not proposing any service level reductions. We're keeping those straight as we go here right now. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we get beyond September, that's where we're looking for other revenue sources or other decisions. So yeah, definitely we have to keep the pressure on Federal Transit Administration.
Yeah, and fault, Mr. Kutcher.
Follow-up, Rep. Stack.
Yeah, thank you, Kutcher, Justin. Through the chair, Commissioner, the reason I asked the question in the line of questions is I do love our wonderful people here from Southeast, and I want to make sure that in the event that we know this kind of timetable, like we at this finance table, we can put a number in the FY27 operating budget through the multi-year process to make sure that that gap can be bridged, right? Let's say we complete our budget process here, you know, and there's no notification of award. Like, we can put, a monetary award conditional upon something to make sure that there is no disruption because of the nature of the cycle, right? So that's the thought process through the chair.
Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the chair. To the chair, really quick, I do recognize that the presentation we have in front of us is really kind of a high-level budgetary process, and that we're not really getting into the weeds on marine highway operations and probably where we need to be as far as presentation on the overall operation. So I understand it. So my question then is through the chair. I see on here that we have system efficiency, that we're looking at longer roads and shorter ferry crossings. And then I see Cascade Point as an investment that was put on here. And then some other things that we're trying to work on with access and roads. But one of the things that's very obvious and very evident is that our service for the Marine Highway has been in steep decline. In the first early years of operation of the Marine Highway system, which was spring it up, build ships, and let's go, we had better ridership than we do today. And that's not because people aren't willing to ride it. It's because it's not reliable to be able to ride it. Specifically, one of my questions has to do with, we said longer roads, shorter ferry crossings, and then we also pointed to Cascade Point where we spent dollars. For years, we've been fighting to try to get a southern connection back, specifically Rupert. Most of the roads, almost 800 miles of them, aren't even ours to maintain. They're Canadian. The route for a vehicle from Seattle to our marine highway system in Rupert is a shorter route by driving than it is to take the Bellingham Ferry. Now, I'm not advocating to remove the Bellingham Ferry route. It's an important part of our system. But the lack of attention with restoring the Rupert run when it's an asset that's there has diminished our ability to use the system by doing exactly what we've said that we want to do here. So my question is what kind of priority is it to get our southern connection to Rupert or alternative back in play?
Commissioner.
To the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, the Prince Rupert is a tough situation, I think, between the we've looked at it from many different angles. Both Deputy Commissioner Keith I and Director Torga have been to Prince Rupert and seen, you know, the site and discussed the possibilities with the local government there as well as the port authority there. There were a lot of ideas about how we could utilize the BC Ferries dock potentially. Our dock there is very old. And, you know, there's some modifications that would be needed to go back in. But the two real challenges there that we've seen that's kind of had us focus our energies in other areas because of the Marine Highway System's needs are the Buy America, Build America requirements if we decide to spend any capital in Canada. And the other piece was the SOLIS requirements. There's actually, my understanding, and Ms. Director Torga would be the person to talk to about this, is there's actually Canadian requirements for safety and then American U.S. Coast Guard requirements, and we have to upkeep our vessels to meet both sets of requirements. And so from those perspectives, you know, it's just been very challenging. A place, not that we're not open to these ideas, and I know that I've had discussions with the mayor of Prince Rupert. You know, if people come to us with a proposal, we're more than willing to consider it. It's just where we're putting our energy right now is in other areas of the Marine Highway System.
What follow-up?
Yes, we're a little pressed, but
thank
yes.
You. So specifically, we had a Cascade Point. There was just a allocation of funding that was expended on that. I know that was all part of the budget last year. There was a veto. That money was then pushed over to Cascade Point and then obligated. Couldn't have that money been used? Because my understanding is that's not federal match money. And couldn't we have used that money to help solve this Rupert issue or an alternative?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, that appropriation was tied to Juneau Access, so we wouldn't have been able to use that at Prince Rupert.
Okay. I think we need to move forward to the federal highway slides. And then we have Mr. Venables. And does Mr. Venables follow? Okay. Sorry. I think we're going to hear from Mr. Venables now. So I need to ask the three of you to temporarily, I guess, if I've got this right, to step aside, at least one of you. Mr. Venables, come join us. Welcome. Venables, please put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Finance Committee. My name is Robert Venables. I'm the Executive Director for Southeast Conference, which is the regional economic development district for the region. Ironically or so, Southeast Conference was formed in 1958 when the leadership from Metlakatla to Yakutat got together in Petersburg, and the first order of business after formation was to advocate for a marine highway system. So that's been a cause that's been near and dear to our heart, and we have an active transportation committee that continues to advocate for all forms of transportation, but chiefly our marine highway system. We've recently been designated as the state's regional planning organization for transportation, so we're privileged to work with the commissioner and team on those type of issues. Myself, I was the sole member of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board that survived every governor from Governor Murkowski on to Governor Dunleavy and sat on his reshaping committee. So very vested in the well-being of not just the ferry system but the communities that it supports. And I think that, you know, I was asked to share some perspective, and I'll do it quickly, on AMHS, its mission, the rural ferry program, and the connection between marine highway system and economic development. And I think it's important to note that ferries are so much more than just a transportation conveyance. It is an integral part of our coastal economy, supply chains, be it for food, materials, personnel, jobs. They were the original, some have said that they were the beginning of what really a social media platform was, right? Because school groups and sports teams from across the region would often be on those vessels together, forging relationships that carried on into adulthood. And I think that the lack of consistent, reliable ferry system is related to some of the social demise that we've seen, could not be able to get together and form those type of relationships. But I think that, you know, literally it's a lifeline for many of the medical services being sought as well. And I think I'd like to make mention of the fact that the number of times I heard the marine highway system referred to as Southeast, I would just like the record to reflect that it is, you know, the South Coast region is 3,500 miles, about 35 communities that stretch from southeast all the way through Prince William Sound, Kodiak area, and on up the chain. So it is a substantial public transportation system for the state of Alaska's southern coastal communities. But it's also why the connection to Prince Rupert is very, very important, because not just because it's a roadhead that has a port connected to it for transportation, but it's an economic hub for energy, for fisheries, for mariculture. It's rail to the Midwest of the United States and ocean-going vessels that go back to Asia. Coupled with a community connection that is steeped in history, culture, and economic opportunity. I appreciate the members' reference to the urgency to get reconnected, and there are substantial steps being made on that regard. The Marine Highway System's decline has led to higher cost in rural coastal communities. I got a call from someone in Skagway yesterday, milk $15 a gallon, which is not unheard of in many parts of the region, but not what you would expect 90 miles north of Juneau. Our business impact survey this year showed a high dependence on the ferry system for incoming supplies, manufactured goods that get sent out, customer arrivals, etc. And the unreliability of the Marine Highway System in recent years has led to a decline of economic vitality, quality of life, and the general population, as families both young and old have found need to relocate. And I think it's really crippling, and it's a theme that goes throughout the state. As we're creating more and more jobs, we get excited about that, and then we find out that maybe 24% of people holding those jobs come from out of state. We've got to rebuild our communities, and the connection between the Marine Highway System is vital to economic development. I was asked to comment on the rural ferry service that was championed by Senator Lisa Murkowski in the Infrastructure and Jobs Act post-pandemic. It provided competitive funding to the states, as you just heard, to support, modernize, and maintain essential ferry services in rural areas. Those three buckets were significantly and strategically set aside because it really aimed to improve connectivity, and it was not intended to be permanent long-term operating funds. It was meant to be gap funding during a time that to help communities post-pandemic. There was labor shortages. There was a lot of reasons why there was cutbacks. The rural communities are the first to drop off the list for service. I just got off the phone before coming here from the mayor of Cake, and there's issues in the community that the lack of ferry system and the transportation has ripples throughout their community. But the idea of the program was to add operational support as and while modernization was taking place, and I think that is substantial to note as you're doing your own deliberations for the budget. And I do recognize that while I'm advocating for spending here, you have many challenges and that you have to balance and weigh out. But some of the key focuses of this program, this federal program, was to provide essential services. And I think it was strategic that, targeting the rural areas, the 50-mile demarcation between communities was to give Alaska better standing and focus, but also was recognizing that the responsibility and obligations to rural communities is real and core to the mission. Public transportation is not a money-making, whether it's a bus or whether it's a ferry. It's part of a social and economic fabric. So I think I'd just like to put that point on the record as well, Mr. Chairman. I think what we've seen with the opportunity to rebuild vessels with the Tustamina replacement vessel the commissioner just mentioned, and then the design for the mainline services, that is being accelerated by this funding bucket. And, with the key to modernize the fleet to bring down the operating costs. So I think that, one of the comments I was asked to make was to, comment on maybe what the biggest challenge is, before the Marine Highway System. And I've been working with DOT since the Knowles administration, and there's always a constant challenge. And maybe I'll do a shout-out to Commissioner Anderson and his team. I don't think there's been a more intensive effort to do long-range planning at every level of transportation than what's occurred over the last 2 years. So we're in a, 20, 30 years too late perhaps, but it's never too late to start doing the right thing. There is a roadmap forward, and I really think that the biggest challenge for AMHS is simply not investing in that plan. What we've seen that, you know, the only way to reduce our operating costs is to implement that long-range transportation plan, to have vessels that take fewer crew, operate more efficiently, and get point to point. We have to replace the current fleet. It was identified 15, 20 years ago that we needed to make these improvements. And guess what? The only thing that has happened in the last 15, 20 years for the mainliners is they got 15 to 20 years older, and to replace them is almost doubled. So we're going to have to spend more money over the next 5 years before. I appreciate the remarks that were said and the challenges there to how do we lower those costs. Well, you have to invest in order to get to that point. And so I really would urge that that the state would really seriously look at the long-range plan and the path forward to implement those fundings needs to make those operating costs lower. We've advocated for more of a business-like structure, and I see the department making strides that direction. So I really applaud that effort, and I think there is a road pathway in that direction. So at the core of this, we're really trying to make our communities livable. We need families to live here, work here, and raise their families. And so that's really an integral part of what the Marine Highway System does. It's not just a standalone entity for moving goods and people. It's really part of the economic and social fabric of our community. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank the committee and the legislature in general just for the care and investment that they do in all of our transportation infrastructure, and particularly the Marine Highway System, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Venables. We appreciate your work. I have to go to a subcommittee closeout, so I'm going to call a brief at ease, give the gavel to Co-Chairman Schrage, and then he, I think, will invite questions for Mr. Venables from you all, and then proceed to the STIP portion. So we'll be at ease very briefly. Don't go anywhere, Mr. Venables, at 3:13.
Back on the record at 3:13 p.m., Mr. Venables, thank you for your remarks. Are there questions from the committee at this time for Mr. Venables? Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Schrage, and through the chair, thank you very much for being here today. I really appreciate it. You talked a little bit about the Marine Highway Service and it being more than just transporting people from one place to the next. I hope you maybe can talk a little bit more in depth about how important the Marine Highway is, especially when we have an opportunity for a southern connection, specifically a connection like Rupert. You said rail, you talked about ports, but can you talk a little bit more about the direct economic benefit of that and how it has harmed our communities from an economic perspective?
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, Representative Bynum, I would invite you to look out the window to start with. There is nothing moving except for surface transportation, and the Marine Highway System is the only way to get around right now. So medical needs, supply chain, guess what? The only thing moving is on the water. So there's a critical connection there. In regards to the Southern Terminal, Southeast Conference was fortunate enough to get a large mariculture grant to help stand up that industry. We're seeing significant investment throughout the state, primarily Kodiak, Prince William Sound, and in southern southeast, where our connections with Prince Rupert is so close and historical that we have similar types of industries being stood up. That location will actually have the first processing center that we already have. Alaskan farmers have a contract for like 100 tons of product. Well, how do you get it there? Often the ferry system is the best last mile of a freight delivery. And so being able to access that, as we start taking a look at forestry and fishery utilization and value-added products, best way to get it to market, you know, is however you can. And so having Prince Rupert be the closest roadhead, railhead, and waterway back across the ocean really provides a lot of opportunity, whether it's, you know, from minerals, forestry, fisheries, et cetera. If we're going to revitalize our economy, we have to have ways to get to market.
Additional questions? Follow-up, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi, through the chair. Again, one more question has to do with when we think about it being used as a people transportation mechanism, but also we see a big spike in tourism and people utilizing that resource in the summertime. We know that the cruise ship industry is a big industry for tourism, but can you talk a little bit about how our marine highway system would be used as a gateway to bringing people into Alaska, not just to Southeast, but to Alaska as a whole? And can the way that the system is being operated make that a more expanded way of people being able to visit Alaska?
Director Venables.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, yeah, I think it's critical as we implement the long-range plan, as we build out the vessels, because one of the, you know, questions before AMHS is, do we build the boats that we have the budget for, or do we build the right boats, so they can take advantage of the needs for connectivity and ridership? I do not. My personal belief is that we do not build the boats for the most highest volume, and then you have a structure that is only dependent on a tourism peak that happens for 60 to 90 days. You build what Alaskans need, and then you utilize that and monetize that to the biggest extent possible, and you maximize that for the, you know, visitors that come into the state. And I think that the department has a wise approach to try to take this budget challenge through the summertime, because that's when the revenue is there to capture. We know the Cross Gulf is very, very popular. Folks who want to get to the rail to get up into Denali and the interior of the state. So there's a lot of facets there that we can market. But right now, the tourism industry is shy to embrace it because of just unreliability. So we've got to get the vessels replaced. The two-year schedule is very necessary in order to be able to market that. You do that, you're able to maximize your revenue opportunities. Then those efficiencies, you close that gap of the fare box that was alluded to earlier.
One quick follow-up.
Okay, quick follow-up.
Yep. Thank you. And one other thing that I've heard mentioned, we talk about SOLAS, the safety of life at sea, and the barriers that that presents. Do you see that as a true barrier long-term if we put it into our plan?
It is an immediate, through the chair, it is an immediate barrier. I think that through a life cycle cost, it's one that is not as expensive as it looks right up front. But, you know, we're working on a number of fronts legislatively as well to try to address that, because as you can imagine, going from Seattle to Ketchikan, if you're on the water and you make a left turn out to the ocean, you need to have that equipment and trained personnel to have be safety at life at sea. You make a right turn in the inside waters into Prince Rupert, that really is an anomaly. So we're looking at some fixes there. And I think that between the efforts to reconnect to Prince Rupert and working with Transport Canada, the Port of Prince Rupert, and others, we've got some solutions that might make itself apparent. And just on an aside for the committee's knowledge, you know, we're also seeing efforts in D.C. that might bring this one-time program into the next transportation reauthorization bill. So it would still be a competitive program, but there would be the set-asides for operational funds. So some of the concerns that were addressed about this being the final year of funding, there is movement, and that will be one of the reasons I'm going back to D.C. next week as well to talk about those opportunities.
Okay, and last question to Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Shragi, and I'm not sure, Mr. Venables, if you know about this, but of course, one of the importance of having our Cross Gulf ferry that start in an American port and end in an American port has to do with many of our military families transiting, and they might be in possession and own weapons that they can't drive through Canada with. And when we first lost our Cross Gulf ferries, we heard from a lot of Fairbanks and Anchorage families who said, we've now got to pay for weapons to be shipped that we thought we were going to be able to put in the truck and drive up with. But Do you have much knowledge about the opportunities lost when we don't have a American port to American port transit system available to get people to the mainland of Alaska?
Director Venables.
Through the chair, Representative Hannan, that has been identified as a very real barrier for supporting our troops and our military personnel and their families. I recall on a drive from Haines to Whitehorse coming across a young mother and her child trying to put on chains in weather much like this because there was not a cross Gulf ferry at the time. And so it is a real impact for our military families, and they were one of the highest users of that service when it goes. But near and dear to my heart is the fact that we have communities like Yakutat that get zero service because we don't have that. So all these things are related. So you know it's hard to justify just a singular focus on the fare box of a large inefficient ferry. We can do better. We need to build better and need to operate better and close that gap of the fare box. But there's a plan in place. We just need to invest in it and make it happen.
All right. Thank you very much, Executive Director Venables. I appreciate you providing the perspective of the Southeast Conference. We are now going to invite Department of Transportation back to the table. Take a very brief at ease while we make that transition. We're at ease. Back on the record at 3:22, Commissioner Anderson, Deputy Commissioner Keith, Director Pannone, thank you for coming back to continue your presentation. I'm going to hand things back off to you. Please continue. Great. Take it.
Sure. For the record, Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I wanted to pause briefly as we're looking ahead into the upcoming fiscal years to talk about federal fiscal year 2025. This team and many of our staff have focused at significant lengths on project delivery, understanding that across all regions, all of our communities, that they wanted us, everyone is asking for us to deliver projects in a more timely manner and focused on community needs. So going back to 2023, this team began working on the 2024 to 2027 statewide transportation improvement program. And as we began to evaluate projects and programs that were needed, and we were able to identify that there was a significant amount of overprogramming. The needs, as everyone can imagine, always outweigh the available funding. So a modernization effort was needed. We needed to look at how the department was structured, both in delivering these projects, but then also in providing the public with a document that was transparent, digitally available, and accessible. So the point of this story is a big part of that effort was some reorganization. At that time, in 2024, we moved forward with three new divisions: the Data Modernization and Innovation Office, Program Management and Administration, which Mr. Pannone is a director of, and Project Delivery Division, which is headed up by our chief engineer. But in that way, organized by functions, it allowed us to have a new look at our STIP, our planning processes, our project delivery in general. And over the next 2 years, we began to see the results of that. And in 2025, we obligated a record amount of federal highways funds, $922.3 million. That included an additional $183 million that the department was able to bring into the state of additional contract authority, which uses our existing revenue from federal highways. Gives us additional authority to spend on the revenue that we have received in previous formula distributions. Along with this, we had highest contract awards for construction with federal highways of $897 million and issued the highest construction contractor payments of $950 million. So our team's really proud of the performance this year and the project delivery metrics, and we do believe strongly in being able to align by functions to help us not only with efficiencies but being able to think outside the box and work together towards outcomes like this. We can move to the next slide.
One thing. Commissioner Anderson.
Yeah, Chair Shragi. Also, you know, I remember last year we were sitting here and you all challenged us to get the work out. That was a big conversation last year. And I think what this reflects is results that our team took that seriously. And we went after it and we had some good results. The $183 million in August redistribution, that's a record for the DOT in Alaska. We've never had numbers like that. And that's a testament to the good work, you know, of the teams on the STIP front, you know, a lot of project delivery fronts, and just, you know, our ability to quickly now assess these differing fund types and really make the most of them. It's not an uncomplicated thing. But I also want to call out that our team was also recognized nationally for the STIP. I think this is important because we've taken a lot of criticism. You know, there was a lot when it came to the STIP. But we've rebuilt it in a way that even the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, which is the national organization, you know, that represents all the states, recognized both Mr. Pannone and Ms. Keith, you know, in a National President's Transportation Award. So you all said, hey, DOT, get the projects out. We took that challenge. We built a new system, and, you know, we delivered. So we hope that, you know, We want to continue doing that, and we just, you know, so thank you.
Commissioner Anderson, congratulations on the record obligation in 25. Were you guys going to touch it all on 24 and the reason for the dip in fiscal year 24?
Yeah, Chair Shragi, yeah, the dip in 2024, I mean, there were a combination of reasons, and this kind of goes into some of the advanced construction conversations, and I believe we have a slide in this, and so we can talk through that on that slide if that's okay.
That's fine. Representative Galvin?
You've already asked the question, and congratulations. That's really great. These big projects are so important. The big money is so important, as you know, to our state and to all of those who are doing the hard work and getting those contracts. Really, really, truly appreciate it.
And Commissioner Anderson, looking forward at 26, what is your projected obligation for 26? Is that going to be touched on in a future slide, or is now the best time to address that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chair Shragi, for the record, Catherine Keith. Yeah, that is a great question and largely why we wanted to bring up the next rolling STIP, 2026 to 2029. In this document, we'll be able to talk a bit more in detail about what our projections are like for this current year. Several things will factor into that, including the reduced state match that's available for our construction program. But this document is now out for pre-release. And we're considering a technical release of this document. We have gotten a lot of feedback from our metropolitan planning organizations and others that those that are critical agencies that work with us on our fiscal constraint tables, for example, they wanted to be able to have conversations with us about it in a way that allows us to correct any errors that may be there ahead of our public comment period. So this is what we've done. It's out right now with Federal Highways, Federal Transit, the Alaska Railroad Transit Operators, our staff. If any of the committee would like to look at this document, please let us know. We are happy to share it. It's not out for public comment yet because this is a work-in-progress draft as we're considering it. And we're taking back any technical issues with the document, and then it'll be out for public comment by mid-March. So looking forward to that. It lays out the next 4 years, and we've committed to doing this after the 2024 to 2027 STIP, in which we were very close to the end of our time clock, in which the previous STIP was sunsetting and when we needed to have a new one in place. In fact, we needed to have an extension from Federal Highways and Federal Transit. So this rolling STIP allows us to avoid that. For this upcoming construction season and for this obligation period, to answer the original question, we expect our obligations to also exceed and equal to what we were able to produce last year. it's going to be dependent on that extra contract authority that Federal Highways announces nationally and distributes to the states, how much of that we'll be able to have come into the state. We believe we have enough obligations on deck for that. It will heavily rely on this advanced construction, these projects that we've advanced constructed in prior years, that we could use these funds, that extra authority this year to pay down. The reason that is relevant is that we do not need state match when we're converting prior advanced construction projects.
Okay, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Schrage, through the chair to wonderful Deputy Commissioner. So I'm having a hard time with this because when I talk to my folks who've been on these projects through DOT for Northern Region, they tell me they are woefully inadequate with the amount of work that they are seeing you guys produce. So I love the fact that we are getting record numbers of federal money. I am concerned that that money is not translating into actual projects for construction season. So my question to you is, what do I tell them? Because I don't know, they seem like these two things are in conflict, through the chair.
DC Keith?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. That is a comment that we have been hearing from Association of General Contractors, AGC, where they want to ensure that the department, through our programming, has an equitable distribution of projects, and not even equitable across the state, but even within one corridor, that we're not piggybacking construction projects one after the another on the same corridor. But in Fairbanks, we certainly have some compounded problems, not only with our own programming and availability of funds, but we work with the Metropolitan Planning Organization there, too, to help schedule out projects. As we've looked at the construction season, both last year and this, we feel it is equitably distributed and fair, and so we wish those contractors the best of luck when they put forward their bids.
I have a follow-up, Mr. Kutcher.
Yeah, follow-up, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, I'm going to maybe simplify this a little bit. So, again, we're going to break it down Crayola style for my slow brain, I guess. I just want to know, so I'll give you an example. The amount of work on the parks, on the Dalton, on the highways people drive, is it more, less, or the same for this season than the year before or the year before, through the chair?
DC Keith? Commissioner Anderson.
Yeah, through the chair, or the co-chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, I wish we had the slide. We don't have it this time because we got the scrutiny, like, is Northern Region getting left out, you know, that we're not awarding as many contracts. In all actuality, if you looked at last year's numbers, and we'll provide these to you, Northern Region and the Central Region, they were both well over $300 million in contract awards last year, which will be work on the street this year. So from those perspectives, there is that. Now, I think one thing that is happening, if you drive down the parks between Fairbanks and Enana, for example, that's a big project, right, that realignment. So there's some big projects that are taking away from what, you know, contractors have been used to in the past, which are the 20 to 30 to, you know, million-dollar projects. And so some of that is having an impact, and so we're working on that to make sure that, you know, as we go forward, there's going to be that bigger suite of projects. But there's some of these big needs that are taking, you know, a larger portion of the program than in the past. And so I think we are seeing that, but the dollar values are being awarded.
Follow-up, Mr. Kutcher.
Yep, follow-up.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to do this again. Commissioner, so when I looked at some of these projects, a lot of these are, the dollar amount's great. A lot of these are airport projects in places and not on the Parks Highway and the Dalton Highway. So the question is, when I go home and I talk to all these people and they're bidding all this work, they tell me the amount of work they have for the typical artery is much less this year than it has been in previous years. So is that true, Parks, Dalton, Richardson, or is that not true? Or is it the same, through the chair?
Commissioner Anderson.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. We'll get you that information. I hate to say without, there's a lot of work happening this year, so I want you to be able to see it. And we'll get you those numbers. Yeah.
Thanks.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. Which one of the DOT members' employees sits on the AMATS for Anchorage?
D.C. Mm-hmm. Keith, are you best to address that?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Allard. At this time, I'm acting Central Region Director. Commissioner Anderson has delegated myself on the AMATS Policy Board, so I serve as chair right now of the AMATS Policy Board.
Okay.
Representative Allard?
Thank you. How'd you know? Thank you. So, Artillery Road. We had a whole bunch of money. The municipalities dwindled it down. I don't know how much money is left out of, I think we started off with $7 million, but we're down to peanuts. I'm trying to figure out, it's probably one of the most dangerous roads, intersections in the state of Alaska. When are we going to be able to address that issue? Is it just, we just don't have the votes on AMATS to make it happen because it's Eagle River?
DC Keith?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard. Yeah, they're working through an updated transportation improvement program with AMATS, so this will be over the next 4 years, so we'll have plenty of opportunity through this next tip to discuss those and see what the priorities are for the MPO.
Rep. Allard.
So how long has this been, 10, 11, 9 years on AMATS? How long has this been on the step, Artillery Road?
D.C. Keith.
Yeah. Chair Shoggy, Representative Allard, I may call a lifeline. Commissioner, do you have that off the top of your head?
I'm pretty sure it's more than 10 years.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard, yeah, I'm sure it's over 10 years as well. So one thing we're going through right now with the municipal planning organizations in the areas is a discussion. You know, when we were going through that last DIP exercise from 2024 to 2027, FHWA, the interpretations changed a bit where we aren't putting projects that are on the National Highway System in the STIP anymore. They just go in that TIP. Okay. And so that has been something where, yeah, that Artillery Road, you know, is in the TIP, and then the funding decisions will be through the TIP. We are having discussions with Federal Highways right now about the legal interpretations of law and who has the authority on the interstate and the National Highway System. So hopefully we'll make some progress there so that when we recognize a project like Artillery Road, which, I mean, there's some challenges there that we recognize that we'd like to get fixed, that we would have some more authority to go in and do that. So.
Hopefully it'll be before my grandchildren are born. I know. It's a lot of work.
Thank you,
Representative
Allard.
I appreciate what you guys do. Thank you.
Representative Moore, and then we're pretty pressed for time, so we're going to go to the next slide after this question. Rep. Moore?
Thank you, Co-Chair Shruggy. This will be really quick. How many current projects do you guys have on the procurement list right now?
Is that D.C. Keith or Commissioner Anderson? D.C. Keith?
Yeah, through the Chair, Representative Moore. The number of construction projects on our tentative advertising list, I'm going to get back with you an exact answer. It's typically 80, but we've changed the configuration of our list slightly to include some shovel-ready projects that we do not have match yet committed for. So we can get that for you.
Follow-up or more?
Thank you. Through the chair. Okay, so, and then maybe a list of the shovel-ready ones as well.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Thank you.
Very good. And if you would provide that to our office, we'll make sure that all committee members get that. Thank you, D.C. Keith. All right, if we could continue to slide 15.
And for the record, Catherine Keith, we've talked a little bit about just how difficult it is to get some of these large projects out, especially with limited funding, not just federal funds, but general funds to be used as a match. So we thought it would be useful to highlight some of these longer corridor outstanding projects that the costs, whether due to scope changes or inflation, and are now pretty significant, and you'll see these in our statewide transportation improvement program. That includes like the Dalton Highway milepost 0-9, several Dalton Highway projects, Sterling Highway corridor improvement projects. So we have this broken out between $100 million, $250 million, as well as those that are greater, $250 million. Federal Highways Administration considers, you know, major projects over $500 million, where we need to have financial plans. And examples of that would be our Safer Seward Highway corridor, as well as Cooper Landing Bypass. So in our STIP, what you'll see on those project pages is that these are broken out into stages. So we've been able to chunk them down into work that could be more easily constructed within 1 year, and that helps us both have an equitable field for contractors where there isn't one award over one corridor, but we have that ability to break it up as needed.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Schrage. Through the chair, just really quick, I was glad to see the West Assistant Access on this list. I was disappointed not to see the Government Hill to Port McKenzie tunnel project. So,
all right. Thank you, Rep. Bynum. Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Schrage. Through the chair to Deputy Commissioner Keast. I feel like I might be going crazy here because I thought you just said that you did all this great work even under the, there was difficulty in getting these projects out the door because not only the lack of match, but of general funds. And I seem to remember a conversation with the commissioner not too long ago where we talked about how we could best make your job not difficult by giving you general funds quickly. And because I don't think anyone at this table wants your job to be more difficult than it already is. We want you to make it easier than it is. So just can you clarify, like, regarding that, like, is it harder to do your job without transparency in when you're going to get general funds, or is it easier to do your job without the knowledge of when you're going to get general funds through the chair?
DC Keith?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. That is a good question. It is absolutely difficult to speak with certainty about projects when we don't have certainty as to the available general funds to be used as match for a federal program. That part is difficult. We try to be as agile as possible and have our project teams put projects on deck so that when we have funds available, we can move forward. But
a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
That answers your
follow-up
question.
Representative.
Yeah, no, it's a great answer through the chair. So what I hear is, in order to have certainty in projects that are going to go out the door, you would require certainty in funding for said projects. And probably the sooner would be better to have that certainty. Is that correct through the chair?
DC Keith?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp, we need to have certainty of funds prior to programming them in the STIP or putting them out for advertising. Yes, we need to have certainty of funds.
Follow-up.
Yeah. Question begets another question, Co-Chair. My apologies. Putting them out for advertising, that's the part I want to talk about now through the chair. Can you, you know, can we bid out a bunch of projects without having the funds technically available to put them out for advertising, even if we anticipate getting them later through the chair?
DC Keith?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. One fine point I want to call out because we've talked about advanced construction. Advanced construction is using funds from future years, even if they're not available in this current fiscal year. We can have advanced construction approvals to put something out to advertise. Otherwise, no, we need to have the funds obligated to be able to advertise.
And last one on this, because Coach.
Rep Stapp.
Yeah, I think Coach is shrugging through the chair. And there's nothing that has happened so far that is hindering that process at all with you guys putting out these advanced construction that couldn't be rectified by some sort of action that we could take. Is that correct through the chair?
DC Keith.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. That's a difficult question to answer. We feel like in our role there's absolutely some obstacles as we go, but we just continue to work with legislature and others on solutions.
Fine follow-up. Sorry.
Nope, I figured that would happen. So yeah. Representative Stapp.
How do I help you?
DC Keith.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. It's clear that all of our construction projects are going to need the match to be able to move forward, and we've communicated consistently on that. We have the available match to get through the rest of the state fiscal year, but beyond that, for the remainder of the year, the general fund match for our federal program is critical to keep moving for those construction projects this year.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you, Representative Stout. All right, additional questions? Not seeing any. Please take us to our last slide.
For the record, Don Pannone. So this slide provides a historical context of almost 20 years, over 20 years, of using advanced construction. What this does is it shows in blue the end-of-year balance of authorized AC, advanced construction, so the amount of projects that we had authorized, and it contrasts with the red line, which shows as a percentage of what our formula funding on an annual basis was in that given year. So if you look back to 2006, you'll see that we were nearly at 200% in advanced construction, so double what our annual formula funds would be. That balance, of course, gets paid off over subsequent year federal obligations. So what this shows is that we are roughly approaching 80% of our annual formula funds. We continue to use that as a way to ensure flexibility with our funds and to accelerate projects if they are ahead of schedule. So AC is a tool that we've been using significantly to help deliver projects. It does require the match as well. So we are not able to advance construct a project without the match. So you'll see in our STIP release, advanced construction is part of our project delivery sequence, is part of how we program our projects, and that we are showing what match we believe is available in our STIP.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you. Co-Chair Shragi, through the chair, I just have two quick final questions, the first of which is probably multi-part.
How many questions is that, Representative Bynum?
It'll technically be three. But thank you, Shragi. Co-Chair Shragi, through the chair, if you were to grade you guys' self on your ability to execute, what would be that grade? And the second part of that is, what in this budget, or do you have everything in this budget that you need in order to make that better? If not, what is it that you need?
That's the first question. Commissioner Anderson question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, I don't like giving folks grades in particular because there's so many different factors. When you look at our teams and what they're responding to and how they're working on not only the overall capital program but responding to events like Typhoon Heilong, I mean, I have nothing but respect and just admiration for our folks and the work that they do. So that piece, I think, is super. I will tell you, last year was tough when the legislature cut us by $5.5 million on operating. We're holding positions vacant to make the year this year. This year is a tough year operating for us, and that's across the department. It's not just M&O. We're actually taking steps right now because in the past when these things would happen, what I saw in my previous roles was people would close maintenance camps. They would go and make cuts. And so when you had snowstorms, it was a tough situation. I couldn't imagine if we would have done that in a year like this year with the snow in Juneau, the snow in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And so, that we make tough decisions like that, when those things happen to us. And we accept that. And we accept there's a fiscal situation. And that's why you're seeing us come back out with these proposals that you saw in the budget today for some of the reorganizations and the modernization ideas and the PCN deletions. Those things... So we're responding to the legislature, and how you're asking us to take care of things, and we understand fiscal constraint and those types of things. And you see that happens within the STIP. It happens within our aviation programs on the capital side across the board. So I think, for us, it's really you're seeing a team that's trying to think outside of the box on some things, trying to take some actions, being responsive and just keeping these things moving forward. So that's where we're at. And I think our team's doing a good job.
Rep Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi, through the chair. Thank you for that response. I've always been a big believer that we don't do more with less. We do less with less. I mean, I believe that we should be doing everything as efficiently as possible. So with that being said, there is some reorganization that you've been talking quite a bit about. I was wanting to know where the public might be able to go to really get a better understanding of exactly what it is you're trying to accomplish with reorganization and how it will make the organization better. I'm getting a lot of questions about it, so some help would be helpful.
Commissioner?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum, and thank you for that. We have a website. It's called the DOT 2026 Action Plan. You can Google it and find it on our website, and it really goes through all these things. It actually has more detail than we went through today. I think, you know, if you're interested, go there and please. And you can comment on that as well. We've also internally, you know, we've done when the governor's budget came out. You know, we do these all staff virtual meetings. We get 500 or 600 people of our staff on, and we record them so others can watch, because we're a very diverse workforce. We're across the state. We're working all hours. We're 24/7, 365. You know, we don't have a standard office job type thing going on. So we work hard to do that. We have work sessions right now with our leadership staff, you know, trying to make sure that the organizational concepts we're thinking through and working and whatnot. So we are trying to hit all the media type outlets that we can on this. I mean, we're open to ideas. We're not an agency that's, you know, if we step into something and it's the wrong way, to step back and go the right way. So, yeah, we take that approach on everything we do.
Thank you. Okay. Additional questions? Yeah, Rep. Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Through the Chair, really quick before we end, I have a quick question about just some I'll just ask. I mean, maybe this is for the Commissioner. Through the Chair. Has DOT entered into any agreements or informal agreements with Glen Farne to use state sourced gravel for free without a charge? And well, I'll let you answer.
Commissioner?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Moore. Yeah, no formal agreements. We are right now working with DNR across the board with the one great thing from our perspective that's happening is the lifting of the public land order 5150. That opens up for the Dalton Highway in particular, that challenging stretch in the middle of the Dalton Highway. One of our big challenges is why you hear about these roads falling apart is we don't have access to quality gravels. And so that piece, and DNR has been great. They've actually already public noticed many of those sites in advance. So when that formal restriction is lifted, I mean, we should have access to those materials. I mean, I'm very hopeful it'll be this summer. But when it comes to Glen Farne, no, we've had some discussions with Glen Farne. We're definitely asking Glen Farne for things like their proposed truck configurations, kind of the weights and the hauling configurations that they'll be doing. And they've discussed with us the joint use of material sources and how we would work together. So they have our project lists, and there's a lot of projects on the Dalton Highway, for example, and the Parks Highway. Mm-hmm. But that we have those project lists, so then they can see where we're working and they can start factoring that into their operations as well. So
nice. Follow up.
Yep, we have one more slide after this. I want to make sure that we adjourn not later than exactly 4 o'clock, but Representative Moore, additional question?
Yeah, okay, well, thank you for that answer. And maybe in the future, when agreements become available, that's something maybe the committee could see, especially the value of the resources that are being used in your agreements. I think that'd be interesting to see. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, and let's go to our last slide now. I think I misspoke on the last one, calling it the last slide, but now we are truly at our last one. Commissioner, let's see, is this D.C. Keith?
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith. This last slide is just closing the loop on some recommendations from previous iterations of our statewide transportation improvement program from our federal agencies. These were written formally as just recommendations for how we move forward, and we have taken this to heart. Some of these include simplification of the language in our narrative document, which the public will be able to see when we put this out in the middle of the month. They looked for us to streamline amendments in some of the structure of the document, how we present information, and we've been working back and forth with federal agencies on exactly what that is, but we hope that this document meets the requirements. We wanted to clarify the procedures. As Commissioner Anderson mentioned, we've been working with Federal Highways, Federal Transit Administration on how Metropolitan Planning Organization Transportation Improvement Program, their TIPs, connect up with our STIP, and we want to ensure that we can continue to focus on projects, our national highway system projects that need work done, that we can program those and complete it. And we do so in coordination with the MPOs, and getting this done in procedural format for our STIP is a focus of this round. We also want to be documenting the 3C process, the continuing cooperative and comprehensive planning, with not just the MPOs, but other local organizations, boroughs. And from there, I would say the last focus and our recommendation for the STIP here is resiliency. We're looking for ways to leverage our federal funds for resiliency improvements. The Dalton Highway is a good example where there's stockpiles that are needed from washouts along the Dalton and without having availability of rock. Previously, we haven't been able to program funds for that, but we are now moving forward with those, and the public will be able to see them.
DC Keith, what spurred these recommendations? Were they a result of something, or is this just part of an annual process of review and recommend?
Yeah, Chair Schwage, the recommendations come with every STIP and every formal amendment that they'll have respond to us with planning recommendations. There's findings if there's something more significant that they want us to address. But these have been sort of consistent recommendations over recent years that we've been taken to heart and internalizing.
Great. And the only other question I had at this time was a moment ago we heard that part of the, not related to the STIP, but part of the reorganization that DOT is currently considering as a result of responding to budgetary cuts, for example, in the last year, the $5 million that was referenced. I think earlier in the presentation we heard that it was really a streamlining and to better standardize processes and workflows across regions. Can you kind of square those two perspectives that have been outlined today? Is that a Commissioner Anderson question?
Sure. Yeah, Representative Strage, absolutely, Chair. Yeah, so it is. It's both. I mean, it's so when we were looking, we've been working through reorganizations for the 4 years that I've been in this position now, and really, you know, you'll see these changes like Division of Modernization and Innovation, and you see us making these changes as we go. When we were looking at this year, we recognized, okay, this is the next step for us, but with that budget pressure, you know, we really took a hard look at how we needed to realign things position-wise. And so it added that extra pressure. We've been on this track to modernize and to look at these things. We look at other states and how they're organized. And, you know, typically, you know, you look at these other DOTs, like a big state like Texas, and it is more functional, the way they run their leadership and not so geographical. So it's a balance, but that's really, it was both. It was actually, you know, we were working through these ideas, number one, that fiscal pressure pushed us to accelerate some things and make some changes.
Okay. Last chance for questions. Very good. All right. Well, to the Department of Transportation, thank you very much for being here today. This yes, I would like to thank Commissioner Anderson, Deputy Commissioner Keith, and Director Pannone for the presentation today. Dealing with an extended committee, thanks for staying after. I know we were pressed for time, but also a lot of interest from the committee. With that, this concludes our business for today. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, March 4th at 1:30 p.m. At that meeting, we will hear two presentations. The first will be a presentation on the Governor's February 18th budget amendments and an updated fiscal summary. We will then take up HB 280, apportionment of taxable income for highly digitized business. With that, we are adjourned at 3:59 p.m. Thank you.